He's staring right at my head that's partially visible. I'm not stalking you, I blurt out. In fact, I nearly got taken out by that poor kid.
He had it coming,
Theo mutters, turning his attention back to his arm. I blink in disbelief, stepping inside of the room. Are you tattooing yourself? In his lap is a sharp, pointy needle and a tiny jar of black ink. It's the worst home tattooing kit I've ever seen, even if I've only seen one.
So, what else am I meant to do?
That's not sterile, I point out. You could get an infection or puncture a nerve. You could kill yourself. Theo laughs dryly.
I don't give a shit. I sterilized the needle, though.
How? I ask curiously. He sighs, pulling the needle from his skin. He places it carefully on his lap, reaching behind his back to pull out a box of matches and a vial of moonshine.
See? Sterilizing tools. Now shut the door. I don't care for any more visitors.
I'm speechless, so taken aback that I accidentally shut the door with me inside. Oh, fuck, I whisper, pulling it back open. Sorry.
You can stay if you want. Just don't annoy me. I'm trying to concentrate.
I linger awkwardly with my hand still on the doorknob. Right. Well, if you don't mind, I actually wouldn't mind hanging in here. I'm trying to avoid people. Specific people. Except I forgot he was one of them.
Just sit down, Avery.
Slowly, I lower myself to the floor with my back pressed against the door. There's an awkward tension in the room, and I'm questioning my mental sanity for willingly locking myself in a room with someone who dismembers people for fun. I don't realize I'm doing it, but I'm so focused on staying quiet with my mouth that my fingers nervously tap the ground. Theo slams the needle down, giving me an exasperated look.
What are you doing?
My body goes immobile as I stare at him anxiously. Sorry, I can't help it. I'm just really nervous. I scold myself for admitting that out loud, waiting for him to mock me or start laughing. But he just sighs again, holding the needle up.
Come here,
he says, beckoning me with his finger. I'm weary about closing the gap between us, but when he gives me an annoyed look, I quickly shuffle over. Theo grabs my hand, making me gasp when he puts the needle in my palm. What are you doing? I ask in a panic.
Distracting you,
he says casually, positioning his forearm so it's in front of me.
Look at the pattern I've done.
My eyes scan his forearm, already covered with various ink. I narrow my search onto the nearly marked skin, drops of blood dripping down his arm. The flesh surrounding the markings looks angry and inflamed, and I can't for the life of me figure out how he's doing it to himself. It's pretty, I mutter, taking note of the intricate swirls.
Follow the pattern. Press down so the needle goes in deep.
You want me to tattoo you? I blurt out. Are you insane? Theo looks at me, all seriousness on his face.
Yes.
Of course he's insane. He's more than insane. He's fucking unhinged. I can't do that, I mutter quickly, trying to hand the needle back to him. He grabs my hand, squeezing it closed around the needle. Gripping me, he pierces the skin on his arm, not flinching.
Like this,
he directs, holding my fist as he shows me the depth of the needle. When he lets go, I pull the needle back out in shock. He grabs the jar of ink, dipping the needle in.
Go on. Try again.
Speechlessly, I carefully hold his arm with my free hand, guiding the needle into a new spot. My stomach churns as I spot a new droplet of blood emerge from the pierced skin, staining his flesh maroon. Theo doesn't flinch or show any sign of discomfort, and I pause, checking his face for guidance. Is this okay?
A little deeper,
he points out, nodding when I push a little harder.
Now go to the next spot.
I repeat the motion, slowly becoming mesmerized by the art. If someone had told me I was going to tattoo someone with a random needle, I would have sent them to Dr. Smith. Yet here I am, alone with Theo as I mark him forever. Eventually, the anxiety starts to ease as I work my way along his skin slowly. There's something beautiful about art, and I hold appreciation in something that's permanently etched on us forever. You know, I say softly, focusing on the needle as it penetrates his skin. I've actually considered getting a tattoo.
Why not? What's stopping you?
I shrug, smiling sadly. I didn't get a chance before I was brought here.
Let me guess, you wanted a butterfly or some generic quote like live, laugh, love?
Not quite, I mumble. I have these ugly-ass scars that I can't stand to look at. Even if I got surgery, it would never hide them fully. So I figured maybe a tattoo would disguise it, or at least distract me when I have to look at them. Theo stays quiet, and I feel embarrassed at admitting it to him. He's probably annoyed at hearing a sob story, regretting the invite to hang with him. When his hand reaches out to me, I freeze, terror unfolding as he grabs my bandaged wrist. Sensing my reaction, he knows he's on the right track. I pray that he pulls back. But when he starts unraveling the bandage, my body starts shaking with all the trauma and memories. I don't want him to see it. I don't want him to touch me. But I'm too blindsided by what's happening to stop him. Slowly, the bandage loosens before it falls to the ground next to my leg. Tears slip down my cheeks before I even realize I'm crying. The scars on my forearm, a harsh reminder of the worst night of my life. They have long since healed physically, but no amount of time will ever take away the mental trauma.
Burns?
Theo asks curiously, his thumb running over the rough, coarse, reddish skin. I nod, ripping my arm away from him. Yeah.
Do they hurt?
He inquires, letting me go. No, I answer quickly in a monotone voice as I feel my walls shoot up. From outside the room, I hear the signal that free time is over, so I quickly shove the needle against his chest, snatching the fallen bandage from the floor. I hastily wrap it around the scars, pushing myself to my feet. Without a word, I rip open the door, exiting the room. I've never let anyone get close to seeing that side of me. I promised myself no one ever would. And I've just done the one thing I knew could break me. Chapter 13. Avery. When I get back to my room, I'm still in such a state of shock that for a moment, I miss the new addition on the end of my bed. Poised on the mattress is a flower, thankfully with no mutilated digits this time. But what baffles me is it's not just any flower, it's a lily. From my short time here, I've seen no other flower in this entire place except roses. And suddenly, there's a white lily in my room. Even more strange is the presence of dried blood on the tips, staining the floral perfection. But it doesn't look like fresh blood. No. This delicate creation has been painted with the red for dramatic effect. I hate to think where they even got the blood from to do so. I could pretend it's fake blood, but let's be honest. Underneath the flower is a handwritten note, a few short sentences scribbled hastily on the white paper.
Meet me after dark. I'll collect you. Bring an open mind, little killer.
There's no second guessing who the note is from. My blood turning cold as I hold the lily in my palm. What could Gray possibly want with me? And going out after dark? Outside of free time? What the fuck? I try to tell myself nothing will happen. It's just a prank to stir me up. But when there's a small tap on my door after the lights are put out, my heart races. I stay frozen on the bed, staring at the metal door. Even if I wanted to open it, I have no way to do so. Through the silence, I hear the sound of plastic before a beeping noise reaches my ears. Staring in shock and horror, the door slowly opens, revealing Gray.
Hello, beautiful. Are you ready?
Are you insane? I gasp. Gray tilts his head, smiling innocently.
We've already been over that. Now come on, or we'll be late.
Late for what? I ask, not moving.
Now that will spoil the surprise, and there's only one thing I like spoiling. So, move your ass and follow me.
Reluctantly, I stand to my feet, following him wearily. I'm second-guessing myself, but if I don't do it, he'll just stand there and nag at me until I inevitably give in. The corridor is dark, almost pitch black, as the two of us walk down quietly. As usual, there's people talking to themselves and screaming in their rooms, but Gray doesn't seem bothered by it. When we turn the corner and head towards the library, I'm surprised to find an orange glow cascading out of the cracks in the door. He pauses before he opens it, looking at me.
Now remember what I said. Keep an open mind. Just do what we say and everything is good. But you're safe.
That's not overly reassuring, I mutter, my stomach clenching. Gray grins.
Trust me, you'll be fine.
He shoves open the door, the sound of people inside immediately reaching my ears. It's a weird change. Usually the library is as dead as my father, but tonight, it's filled with at least 20 people. They are spaced out around the room, and judging from the voices behind the makeshift curtains at the end of the book aisles, down in private little areas. As we head to the back of the library, I notice the tables have been pushed to the side. The center floor space has candles sporadically placed, and there's a singular chair pushed against the wall. Damon sits upon it like a throne, scanning the room as people mingle like it's a college party. His eyes immediately lock onto us as we enter, honing in on me as I linger behind Gray awkwardly. His mouth pulls into a tight line, his disapproval obvious. But Gray clutches my hand, squeezing it as we approach.
Gray,
Damon greets, not taking his eyes off me. Gray lets go of my hand, putting his arm around my shoulders like I'm an old friend.
Is everyone here?
Damon nods.
Let's begin.
He stands, clapping his hands together once, the sound echoing around the room. Instantly, everyone falls silent, people congregating around us to listen.
Welcome everyone to our bi-weekly carouse. There's a few new people here, so we'll go over the rules. Existing members should pay close attention. I don't want any repeat incidents.
I'm too nervous to scan the room, so I keep my eyes forward on Damon, standing close to Gray.
Cirque du Mort is an exclusive group operating out of Lilydale. Members are prohibited from speaking of the society to outside people. I'm the head of the society, therefore everything I say goes. If you don't like that, there's the fucking door. Gray and Byron are my right-hand men. Listen to them. Preferably speak to them before you bother me. You've been chosen as you have potential, which will benefit us. In return, you receive the benefits here that the other patients do not have. There's food in the corner, and as you can see, our private rooms have been set up for your enjoyment.
My eyes light up at the mention of food, and I can't help but peek over at one of the tables against the far wall. To my astonishment, it's filled with everything from fruit, party hors d'oeuvres, sweets, and alcohol. I'm staring at a fucking mirage. After endless amounts of crappy pasta and raw vegetables, it's intoxicating to see the buffet. Gray's body shakes with silent laughter as he catches me drooling over the food. I quickly turn my attention back to Damon, my mind in disbelief.
Our meeting will be next week on Wednesday night. If you receive an invite, take note that it's mandatory. If you're assigned a task, you will do so without question. The moral of the story here is, you look after us, we'll look after you. Now, fuck off.
Voices fill the room quickly as people scatter in various directions. Some head back into the private blocked-off rooms, while others talk. Me? I immediately head straight for the food. I don't recall a time when I've ever been offered food like this. There's so much on offer that I can't decide what I want first. Gray comes up next to me, laughing.
See? I told you to keep an open mind. You should try the strawberries. Dip them into the chocolate. It's...
He blows a kiss, winking at me. Done deal, I tell him, grabbing one. As I shove the sweet fruit into my mouth, I take a moment to glance around. The private rooms intrigue me, and I stare at the curtains hung up. Why is there one random red curtain and the rest all black? I ask curiously. Gray looks over, nodding.
That's the exhibition aisle.
The what? He grabs my hand, dragging me towards it. I hastily shove the rest of the strawberry in my mouth before he pulls back the curtain, pushing me inside. I'm not sure what I was expecting, but it wasn't this. Inside the aisle, there's three people inside. Two of them are stark naked, banging against the shelves, while the third is naked with her ass against the wall. And judging by her face twisted in pleasure, there's something else happening that I can't see.
Glory hole,
Gray points out at my confusion. What? I breathe out. He laughs, leaning against the shelf as he watches her grind her hips.
It's a glory hole. It's connected to one of the rooms next to the library. There's a hole in the wall.
Is she fucking someone through the wall? I gasp.
Have you never heard of a glory hole before?
He asks, bewildered.
Yeah, there's a dude on the other side. Damon picks them. It's for people who want to fuck but don't have someone already lined up. It's a public service, really.
My eyes widen as her body starts to shake, her mouth falling open into an O shape. Her fingers brush against her clit, and I'm mesmerized when she cries out. The girl falls to her knees, panting, and behind her, I can finally see the glory hole in all its glory. A glistening dick pokes through the circular hole, but as far as anything else goes, I can't make out who's on the other side.
Do you want to have a go?
Gray offers sincerely. My cheeks redden as I shake my head. No, that's okay.
Are you ashamed of sex, little killer? Like I said, we all have urges.
I bite my tongue, accidentally locking eyes with the girl as she finally catches her breath. She smiles at me warmly, not at all fazed that I'm watching her. I don't have any urges, I whisper to him, embarrassed. I wouldn't even know what to do. Gray looks at me, stunned.
Come with me for a second.
He grabs my hand, pulling me out of the aisle before I can answer. We cross over the middle space between the shelves, Gray pulling me inside a black curtained aisle. There's no one inside, and immediately, I panic. What are you doing? I ask, frazzled, trying to pull back my hand.
Relax. I'm not going to do anything. I just want to talk privately.
It doesn't reassure me, but when he steps back, creating distance between us, I know it's for my comfort. What's up? I gingerly ask. Gray sits on the floor, patting the ground. I sink down slowly, crossing my legs.
How old are you?
He questions, curiosity in his tone. 20, I answer slowly. Gray nods.
And you've never had sex?
Not really, I mumble, looking away. He hums to himself, acknowledging my answer.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
My mental walls shoot up and I shrug. Not much to tell. Have I had sex before? I guess so.
But it wasn't consensual.
I can't bring myself to look at him. He already knows the answer. He always does. Shaking my head slowly, I confirm it for him, immediately feeling all the hate and disgust for myself like I did that night.
Who?
He asks, his voice sharp. There's no playfulness anymore, just darkness as he demands answers. I don't know, I tell him honestly. One of my father's friends, they were drunk. My father lost a bet, and apparently I was the prize. I don't remember much. Little snippets still exist in my head, but for the most part, I blacked out during it. Even now, there's a black hole in my memory where I know the event occurred, but it's like my mind erased it to protect what little dignity I had left. Except it can't erase the physical trauma I have. That's something I'll have to carry with me forever.
Are they still alive?
He asks, surprising me with his question. I don't know, I whisper. Probably. Gray nods, his face dark.
Well, I can guarantee no one here will ever touch him like that. I'll make sure of it. In fact, it's one of Damon's rules. We don't take kindly to rule breakers.
Good, I manage to say, hugging myself. His face softens as he takes in my broken, pitiful position. He shuffles over to me, sitting next to me. I don't even flinch as our arms brush. He reaches down, cupping my hand in his.
There's nothing to be afraid of here.
I laugh dryly. To be honest, this place is the most fucked up, psychotic invention full of unhinged sociopaths, and it's still more pleasant than my childhood home. How's that for fucked up? Gray reaches across with his other hand, turning my face to look at him. As soon as our eyes lock, tears fill up in my eyes, spilling down my cheeks. I don't make a sound, though, but the vulnerability I've exposed is more than I can handle. He leans down, kissing one of the fallen tears on my cheek. My eyes flutter closed, but I don't move away. When he pulls back slightly, I open them again, staring into his intense eyes. Before I realize I'm moving, I lean forward, pressing my lips to his. Gray responds immediately, kissing me back gently. I can sense he's letting me control it, and the action doesn't go unappreciated. I've never wanted someone more. For the first time in my life, I've felt seen and respected. Being here, with him, has made me feel more alive than I ever felt on the outside. Our kiss gets more intense, and I push myself onto my knees as I lean against his chest. Finally, I need air more than I need him, and I pull back slightly, breathing heavily. Thanks, I say flustered.
No, thank you. You taste sweet, like trouble and danger.
Sitting back, I look away shyly. It's the strawberries.
Come on, let's get you some more food. We need to satisfy that appetite.
Chapter 14. Avery. I have so many questions about Cirque des Moors, and for the first time since arriving here, I'm starting to see things in a different light. None of it makes sense, yet it makes an unbearable situation tolerable. I feel energized the next morning from the influx of decent food, despite the dark cloud hanging over me. I revealed some dark secrets last night to Gray. The worst part is, I can never take it back. That vulnerability and weakness is out there now, for him to use as he pleases. Yet, I think I don't care. It's almost like a weight has been lifted from my shoulders, freeing me from the chains. I'm still locked down, but I'm moving. Is this what Dr. Smith meant by healing? Maybe there's some hope for me yet. I'd give anything to just be happy. I'm not even bothered by Dr. Markle's singing as he prances around the room, grabbing a needle to draw my blood. I couldn't tell you what they are checking for. Apparently, it's just some routine follow-up. In the real world, I guess people check their health regularly. The only times I ever saw a doctor was when I was injured beyond the point of basic first aid. Occasionally, the school nurse would help when I was sick. But other than that, my interactions with doctors are limited.
You'll feel a little prick,
he says happily, my face contorting as the needle pierces the skin.
All done.
Okay, I answer, holding the cotton ball over the spot. What else do you need? Dr. Markle labels the vial of blood, tossing the needle and syringe into a hazards bin.
I'd just like to check your burns and your back. If you have any concerns or want me to look at anything else in particular, I'm more than happy to.
I shuffle onto the bed, letting him inspect the scar in my back through the open gown. It hurts a little when he presses, but I don't flinch.
I'm going to prescribe you some long-lasting pain relief. I also spoke to Dr. Smith, and he agrees that if you would like to try some type of anti-anxiety medication, we can also prescribe that.
I don't want any, I tell him, readjusting the gown. I'm not anxious. Obviously, I'm anxious. If you looked up the word in the dictionary, there's probably a picture of me next to the meaning. But the last thing I want is to be doped up on some chemically altering drugs.
Well, if you change your mind, just ask. Perhaps you'd like to read some of the pamphlets about the different options. If you're concerned about side effects, you'll be pleased to know they are quite minimal.
He hands me a brochure with the Lilydale name printed across the top, a list of medications described with information on benefits and side effects. The branding of the facility on the drug menu really just puts the icing on the cake.
Now, may I see your arm?
He asks, looking at the bandage. Begrudgingly, I hold it out, letting him unwrap it. I've already shown one person the hideous scar underneath. What's the worst that can happen? As soon as the bandage falls, my stomach drops, and I look away, unable to bear witness to the fucking things. Okay, that's the worst thing that can happen.
I'd say for the most part, it's healed. You may still get some nerve pain from time to time, but without a skin graft, that's probably the extent of the physical healing,
Dr. Markle says. I nod briskly, wanting this conversation to be done. Sensing my displeasure, Dr. Markle rebandages my arm and sends me on my way. The guard leads me back towards my room, the two of us walking in silence. As we approach the girls' wing, I spot Vivian up ahead, chatting to Siobhan. Hearing our footsteps, she pauses conversation, looking over at me. It's not like I expect a giant wave or greeting. Hell, I'm not even sure if she'll acknowledge me with a proper glance or nod. But I certainly don't expect her to charge at me when we're in reach. My back gets slammed into the wall before Vivian's nails scratch my face like the catty bitch she apparently is. I let out a yell, trying to shove her off, but the guard beats me to it, flinging her across the hall into the opposite wall. You fucking bitch! This is all your fault! She screeches at me, trying to push the guard out of the way to lunge at me again. I stare at her silently with wide eyes, not moving. Slowly, I look at Siobhan, who is watching the exchange with a frown. She shakes her head at me, looking bewildered and exasperated.
That's it. Solitary confinement for you.
The guard grunts, dragging her down the hall. He looks at the two of us, sending a warning with his deathly gaze.
Don't even think of any funny business. The other guards are on their way.
He disappears around the corner, dragging the screaming Vivian with him. I turn to look at Siobhan wearily, keeping my distance. Well, that was fucked, Siobhan mutters annoyed. Now we're all going to get in shit. I didn't do anything, I say defensively in a quiet tone. Siobhan snorts. Not directly. She's pissed at you. For what? I gasp. I literally haven't spoken to her since I arrived. She gives me a look that screams, really? And it doesn't take long for me to piece together the puzzle. Her boyfriend? I ask quietly, reaching up to grab my stinging face. Siobhan nods. Not only did he lose his finger, but somehow he's having withdrawals which has sent him off his rocker. Not to mention he's in the bad books with everyone. He's probably going to have his sentence extended or worse, kicked out to prison because of you. Because of me? I breathe out in disbelief. He attacked me. I had nothing to do with anything. I didn't provoke him, and I certainly didn't have anything to do with his finger. Footsteps rapidly approach us, guards sprinting down the corridor towards us. I jump when a siren rings out, but it's not the usual one. This one is louder, more like a foghorn than the usual signal of sessions starting and ending. I cover my ears, yelping when a guard grabs my arms, pulling them behind my back like I'm some type of criminal under arrest. You might not have done it, but your hound dogs did. Siobhan grunts, being shoved into the wall face first. And Vivian is out for blood now. Well, if blood is what she wanted, blood is what she got. My face is swollen and stinging, the three gashes along my cheek reddening more and more by the passing minutes. I'm stuck in my room, unable to do anything about it. Shortly after we were detained, we were all sent to our rooms, along with the rest of the Gen Pop. No doubt everyone will be aware now that something has gone down. My nerves are shot, realization hitting me that everyone is going to be punished now for this petty bullshit, and I'm going to be known as one of the culprits. The last thing I need is more enemies in this place, or getting a bad rep. A few hours later, we're all escorted from our rooms to the hall. I'm not sure what to expect, thinking maybe it was just lunch. But when I arrive, I'm surprised to see Mr. Whittingham standing at some portable podium. When the last of the Gen Pop arrives, he scans the crowd angrily. Almost every single guard appears to be here too, lining the room surrounding us.
There was an incident earlier today.
He starts annoyed.
Several people were involved in an altercation in the hall. As a result, there will be no free time today or for the next 3 days. Meals will be delivered to your rooms, and all classes are temporarily suspended.
My mouth drops in shock. For a minor fight, this seems like such an overkill. I guess they weren't kidding when they said this is how they control us. A few people around me look over, taking in my face. They know. They can tell. Multiple sets of angry eyes glare at me, and I slink backwards slightly, trying to hide. Across the room, I spot Damon, his mouth stretched in an angry line as he listens to Mr. Whittingham. He looks mad, pissed even. I don't think I'll be invited back to the circus anytime soon. I'm surprised to find Gray isn't next to him, but I don't try to seek him out. I stay focused on not drawing attention to myself, shifting closer to the guards inch by inch, in case anyone decides to lunge at me again.
If you are required to attend professional appointments, you will be collected from your rooms. Other than that, you will all remain in your individual rooms for the next 3 days. The only time you'll have group interactions is your usual shower schedule. The guards will escort you back now. Let this be a lesson to you all. We won't tolerate poor behavior. You should be appreciative of your position here and know we can take it away just as quickly.
I blink slowly, feeling horrified. This is a totally different man from who I met when I arrived. I knew that happy persona was just a guise. No one works in a nut house and boasts about it like it's some grand boarding school. This is the real Mr. Whittingham, and I'm in the damn firing line. I'm not sure who I'm more scared of, him, the other students, or Damon. Because while Mr. Whittingham rambles on about our punishment, his eyes find mine across the room. He's cold, glaring at me as he stares at the gashes on my face. Nothing is a secret here, and just as things started to improve, it's all been ripped away from me. Just like every other time in my fucking life. I miss the end of his speech, only coming back to reality when people around me start moving towards the doors. People shove into me, smashing my shoulders with theirs as they glare at me. I quickly turn and head towards a guard, giving him a small smile. Room 213? I say meekly. He nods, grabbing my arm and pulling me out of the hall. I stand close by, wondering if someone is going to stab me when my back is turned. Thankfully, we make it back to my room safely, and I'm shoved inside before the door is slammed closed behind me. I sit on the bed, letting out a sigh with my shaky breath. There's a stream of noise outside the room as other people are escorted to their rooms, the sounds dying down eventually. Then, before I can prepare myself for it, the lights go out, sending the room into darkness. It's barely the middle of the day, but the lack of windows means our only light source is the fluorescent bulbs above us. So when they get shut off, I'm left alone in the dark. Slowly, as the hours pass, I begin to get disoriented by the time, my body struggling to figure out why it's dark in the middle of the day. Lunch does not arrive, and I suspect it's on purpose. The fuckers are starving us as well, really making sure to hit that final nail in my coffin. By the time dinner comes, I'm feeling so sick in my stomach that I can't eat the sad excuse for beef. It smells funky, and without light, I don't dare try to take a bite. I'm not even confident it is beef. They come to grab me from my shower, confusing me with the change in times. But apparently, they needed time to serve rotten food by room service and fuck around with the temperature gauges. When I step into the shower, I'm met with a stream of freezing cold water. I'm still shivering when they send me back into the pitch-dark room, immediately jumping under the covers to get warm. This is a fucking nightmare.
Chapter 15. Gray. God, Arthur can be a downright cunt. Punishment is never usually this severe, so I'm not sure what's got his panties in a twist. Maybe Teddy isn't keeping on top of things. Whatever the reason, I'm annoyed. This puts a halt in my plans, but never fear. Where there's a will, there's a way. Thankfully, I still have Charmaine's pass in my possession, so when the guard drops me off at the door to my room, I excuse him. I wait for everyone to head into their rooms, and when the coast is clear, I set off on finding Damon. He's exactly where I suspected he would be, in his room with the door open. This is fucking annoying, I say, announcing my presence as I stroll in. Damon nods, a bottle of beer in his hands.
I'll have words with them later, but I'm told the lights are going out soon.
Seriously? I scoff. What is he trying to prove?
That he still has control. He's wrong.
He reaches under his bed, pulling out a small cooler that's plugged into a new electrical power point. Opening it, he fetches a beer, handing it to me. Cheers, I say happily, grabbing it from him and popping open the top.
We still need to talk about last night.
Damon points out with a slight grunt.
You brought your friend.
I grin. She's harmless. Relax.
Right. Have you even bothered to do a thorough check on her before bringing her into my business?
Throwing myself onto the end of the bed, I stretch out. Of course I have. She'll be fine. In fact, I think she has qualities that will come in useful down the track.
Useful? Like getting us all punished?
I tisk at him, waving my finger playfully. Come on now. That wasn't her fault. Whatever drama is happening with Hallman and his little bitch, that was out of her control. Besides, it started with us.
I don't care who started it. At the end of the day, I have a reputation to maintain.
And you shall maintain it. Damon narrows his eyes at me.
Are you willing to provide an undertaking to that effect?
I'll do you one better, I grin. I'll do a blood oath. He looks at me, raising an eyebrow.
You're good at reading people, but I'm better, Gray. You need to watch yourself. She's a dark horse.
She's been through hell, Damon. Imagine what will happen when she finally takes hold of that pain and runs with it. Imagine what she can become.
She could be a living nightmare.
I snort. I hope so. The possibilities are endless. Damon shakes his head, crossing his ankles on the bed.
You can't control people like that, Gray. She's too unstable. Even if you manage to get her on your side fully, there's too much risk. She will just go rogue. What benefits could she possibly give us?
It's obvious she's desperate for a family. We can mold her, grow her into what we want. It sounds bad, I admit, but it's not. Avery is so desperate to please and have someone smash through that tough outer shell she hides behind. As soon as I do, she'll be able to really shine.
You're infuriating, Gray. Your savior complex will be the end of you one day.
Aw, are you worried about my well-being? I taunt. Damon smiles, laughing under his breath.
Always, brother. We just don't want a repeat of what happened last year.
My face darkens at the memories. Avery is different. She's not like that.
You said that before, too.
Damon points out with a pitying look. She's not like that. I repeat more strongly. I was wrong before. I'm not now. Damon nods.
Okay, I believe you, especially since you never admit to being wrong, but if this goes south, you know the consequences.
It won't, I say, standing up. I'll make sure of it. There's something powerful about lurking in the dark, a predator seeking out prey in the shadows of the night. Not to mention the fact that the majority of the facility are in confinement, and I'm out here roaming freely. It's intoxicating. Powerful. I stand outside the door that reads 213, smirking at the metal plate. If I listen closely, I can hear Avery on the other side, breathing softly in the dark. When I tap the card on the access pad, it makes an oddly loud sound, echoing through the empty halls. Immediately, I hear Avery gasp from inside. I swing open the door and stare into the darkness. Knock, knock, little killer.
Gray?
She answers hesitantly through the abyss. The one and only. I grin, but she can't see it. I walk in, closing the door behind me, leaving it just open enough that it won't automatically lock.
What are you doing here?
I move through the room, having memorized it by now. Pausing at the side of the bed, I can sense her next to me. I came to visit. Thought you might be lonely, I tell her. She doesn't respond, so I sit down on the edge, my hand sliding along the mattress until I find her leg. She twitches when her skin touches, but I'm surprised that she doesn't pull away.
You shouldn't be here. You'll get in trouble.
I laugh, squeezing her leg lightly. Baby girl, when are you going to learn? I'm in charge here.
I doubt that. Besides, I've already gotten everyone in trouble. The last thing we need is to be caught.
My blood boils at her words. How dare she think that? Of course she blames herself. Absolutely typical symptom and characteristic of Avery. Don't you dare, I warn her gently. That is not your burden to bear. You're the victim, and believe me, when this period is over, there will be consequences for Vivian.
Don't.
She breathes out in a panic.
Please don't. She'll come after me again, or everyone will blame me anyway. Let's just leave it.
I wish I could see her face, though I can already picture it, twisting in emotional agony. It's really not fair. Avery, I say sternly, you need to realize that there are rules here. And then there are rules. She started this mess. Her and her pathetic little boyfriend have no one to blame but themselves. And I won't have you taking their misery and making it your own. Do you understand me? I squeeze her leg again to emphasize my point.
Okay.
She mutters finally in a quiet voice. Good, I grin, my tone returning to cheery. Now, I think we should have a discussion about what happened at the library. She tenses up, but I don't move my hand.
Which part?
The part where you kissed me, I casually point out. I think we should talk about this. Avery squirms uncomfortably.
You're right. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done it.
No, I start. You should have done it sooner. You deserve the finer things in life, and like I said, there's certain things I like to spoil. She falls quiet, and I can practically sense my words turning over in her head, confusing that poor little beaten-up brain. Before she can say anything, I find her in the dark, pushing her backwards onto the bed. I lean over her, holding my weight above her. Through the darkness, I start to see the faint outline of her as my eyes adjust. Her breathing is getting a little heavier, and I take note of it, looking for the little body signs. I want to try something, I say, but I need your permission to do so. Avery reaches for my arm, her hand grabbing my forearm as I stay above her.
What is it?
She asks, curiously, with an undertone of fear. Leaning down, I feel her breath on my face, and judging by the sharp suck of air she does, she can feel mine too. I want to touch you.
You are touching me.
She points out, redirecting the awkward tension that only she feels. Laughing softly, I find her lips, brushing mine over hers in a tease. I want to touch you. Here, I say, my hand lightly caressing the front of her shorts. Avery grabs my hand, but she doesn't move it. She just holds it, squeezing it in trepidation as she ponders my request. Finally, she speaks, her words shaking.
Are you going to fuck me?
Not today, little killer, I answer reassuringly. I just want to show you that there's more on the table to offer than what you know. She lets out a breath, that fire slowly kindling back to life.
I'm not completely dense gray. I know there's more. I just haven't experienced it.
I laugh. That's what I'm here for, baby girl. Now I'm going to slowly take your shorts down your gorgeous legs. My fingers hook into the waistband of her shorts, pulling them down as I'm speaking. She lets go of me, letting me remove them. Now, I'm going to take your underwear off. I repeat the motion, talking her through the process. I place the two articles of clothing next to us on the bed, running my hands up her thighs in a calming manner. My fingers and hands caress her inner thigh, but I don't go any higher. Not yet. Not until she's begging me for it. Pushing her thighs further apart, I groan, the sweet scent of her reaching me. It takes all my control to be patient and not bury my face into her saccharine heaven. God, the hold this girl has over me. Damon is right, she's pulling me in so quickly. But I want to fall. I want to drown in everything about her. I don't care if it kills me. It would be the ending of all endings. A fitting demise for someone like me. I'd happily go, accepting my fate, if it meant just hearing her say my name one final time. Avery finally cracks when I don't say anything or move.
Then what?
Trailing my hand up her thigh, I brush my thumb over the skin inches away from her sensitive spot. Her hips jolt. Her body moving on its own as it silently begs me to touch it. But I won't. Not yet. I want to hear Avery ask for it. That way she knows she's in control. She knows that she has a choice. And when she does decide, we're going to remember that it was me that made her fall apart. And feel something other than pain. She makes a tiny sound, her hips almost chasing my hand when I move it away. I can sense the disappointment from her, and I do it again, both thumbs trailing a delicate, invisible string.
Gray.
I hear her choke back words, fighting with the devil on her shoulder, but the devil on her shoulder isn't as strong as the one between her legs. Avery hesitates for a few more seconds and I chime in, encouraging her, letting her know she can fall over the edge. I need to hear you say it, little killer. Tell me you want me. Tell me you need me to touch you like no one else has before.
I need you. Please.
I smirk, my eyes closing as I replay the words in my head. I wish I could record them so I could listen to her again and again. Since you asked so nicely. Leaning forward, I place a kiss to her inner thigh first, listening to the ragged sounds that escape her lips. I make a trail along her hips, kissing and running my tongue along her skin. When I complete my semicircle route, I flick my tongue out, slowly running it over her clit. She nearly throws us both off the bed with the tiny movement, her body jolting so much in response that my hands automatically reach for her hips, holding her still. I taste her again, groaning deeply as my senses explode with the flavor of her on my tongue. God, you taste so fucking good, I whisper to her. She whimpers in reply, caught off guard. I listen to the sounds, taking note of what she likes best, and repeating it over and over and over again. I don't go any lower, though. One day soon, I'll be able to explore that tempting side of Avery. But today is about her and keeping it to a certain level. She needs to be comfortable, needs to learn that she can trust me. My cock hardens at the thought of being inside her one day, and I grind my hips into the bed beneath me, trying to find some tiny bit of relief. But honestly, all I need is her pleasure. Her pleasure is my pleasure, and as I increase my movements, getting faster and faster, the sound she makes confirms that I'm doing my damn job well. Suddenly, she stills, her hands slamming onto the bed as she clenches the blanket in her fists. She's getting close to coming, her body tensing up as she fights the sensations, probably unsure of what's coming.
Oh, God. Fuck. Oh, God.
I'm your God now, little killer, and I'm your fucking devil, too. Sucking her clit into my mouth, her body explodes, hips jolting up into my face as she cries out. My tongue caresses her clit, drawing circles around it as she rides out her high. I take my sweet time, enjoying all she has to offer, until she starts squirming again, the sensitivity killing her. Pulling back, I rest my hands on her thighs, listening to her out-of-control breathing as she tries to bring herself back to earth. I don't think she realizes it, but she lets out this little shaky breath, followed by a tiny, almost inaudible moan that gets caught in her throat. And it's at this moment I realize I'm never letting her go. Now that I've tasted her and heard the sound she makes when her world falls apart in the best way, she's mine. Avery is fucking mine.
Chapter 16. Avery. The hours turn into days, and to be honest, I have no idea what time it is anymore. Being locked in this damn room isn't the worst thing. That honor goes to being trapped with my mind, dancing around in circles at what happened with Gray a few days ago. I should be happy that isolation ends in a few hours, but honestly, I'm crapping my pants. I'll have to face everyone. What if they can tell that something happened? Not to mention, I'll have to face Gray. Thank God he couldn't see me during it. I was so self-conscious about my body, but the darkness helped give me confidence. Don't get me wrong, it was fucking amazing. Mind-blowing, even. I've never felt pleasure like that before. It was like he opened the door to a new universe I didn't know existed. If I'm being completely honest, it makes me want more. I don't know what more is, but I'm addicted. The feeling, the rush, it was everything. There's a quick knock on my door a few hours later, my heart racing. I'm surprised to find I'm disappointed when it opens and I'm face to face with a guard.
Isolation is over. Follow me,
he says, annoyed, shoving his thumb in the direction of the corridor. I wearily head out of the room, glancing down at my fellow girls emerging from their rooms. There's no sign of Vivian, thankfully, and we're all led to the hall where this time, it's Damon standing on a table waiting for us. My brows crease in confusion. He's made it clear that he prefers doing things differently, usually getting his right-hand men to do things like this. Not to mention the strange fact that it's not Mr. Whittingham addressing us. When everyone is inside the hall, he scans the room, stopping on me briefly before acting as if I'm a nobody in a crowd of strangers.
We're back to normal, people. This time, sort your fucking shit out. No more repeats of crap like that. I don't care if you're mad, hurt, or just downright fucked up. Control your shit. Next time, it won't just be the facility's punishment you will deal with. You will also have to deal with us.
No one says anything. The tension thick as people nod. Judging by Damon's speech, I suspect Vivian and Sam might be lurking in here somewhere. What surprises me the most is no one is looking at me this time. There's no death glares or heated whispers. I'm just invisible.
Whittingham has agreed to let free time commence again, so you have 2 hours. Now leave.
People scatter happily, no one barging into me as they head in their separate directions. I stay standing, unsure what to do when a voice behind me makes me jump.
Well, good afternoon.
I whip around, finding Gray standing there with a grin. Hey, I say awkwardly, rubbing my arm. It's good that we're out of isolation. I was starting to run out of toilet paper. Wow, real smooth, Avery. Gray nods.
It is. I thought I'd accompany you to the library.
The library? I repeat, swallowing. He laughs, startling people walking past. They scatter like mice while Gray links his arm with mine, pulling me in the direction of the library.
I don't bite, little killer. Let's just hang and catch up.
The library is back to its usual setup. No evidence of secret societies lurking here in the night. When he leads us down to the end of an aisle, I'm relieved when he sits down patting the ground. I sit, crossing my legs, unsure where to start with the conversation. Maybe he's going to tell me he made a mistake, or that I've been hallucinating the entire thing.
You're glowing. Did you have fun?
My cheeks redden, and I stare at the floor, giving a small nod. Yeah.
Do you want to learn more?
I gape at him, looking around wildly. Right here? Right now? He shrugs casually.
If you want. We don't have to do anything today. I just want to make sure you're comfortable. Because if I'm being honest, Avery, I'm addicted to you. And I have no intention of stopping, if that's okay with you, of course.
Fucking hell. I guess so? I stumble. I guess we could give it a shot.
We can do as much or as little as you like. You just let me know what you like and, yeah, we'll go from there.
I nod, surprised. Okay. I don't know what else to say. I'm as useful as a brick right now, too stunned to form words. This man is starting to get a hold on me, and it's the most unusual feeling. I've never had those sensations about anyone or anything in my life, and every day I second-guess myself, wondering what type of trouble I'm walking into. But let's be honest, I'm already in trouble. I've killed my father, I nearly died, and now I'm in a damn asylum with a bunch of lunatics. There's really only one direction I can go from here. Gray senses my uncertainty, reaching for my hand. He threads his fingers through mine, leaning against the shelf, looking relaxed.
Freedom is good,
he remarks. I laugh. You are waltzing around. I think you are fine.
True. It definitely had some benefits, though.
He wiggles his eyebrows and I blush before laughing awkwardly. Ugh, I'm not the type of girl to just laugh and act like an idiot. How about 20 questions? I ask, redirecting the conversation. Gray nods.
Sure, you can go first.
I tap my fingers against his hand, thinking. How long have you been in here for?
26 months. And change.
That's a long time. I guess not really in comparison to people's stay here. He shrugs.
It varies.
Does it, though? I ask, curious. Do people actually leave completely rehabilitated, or is that just a myth? Gray looks at me surprised.
Yeah, people leave. Not often because of the time it takes, but they do.
Really? Seems like I'll be here forever, I mutter. No one has left here yet.
You've only been here a short time, and there's limited places, so the turnover rate is slow. I think the last person who left was about 6 months ago. Young lad, about 23. He was here for 4 years.
What did he do? I ask. Gray laughs.
He's stabbed his rapist.
My mouth and eyes open in horror. That seems justified, though. Why did he get sent here for that?
Because before he stabbed him, he went on a rampage through his hometown and attacked a bunch of people who looked like his attacker. No one died, thankfully, but he was in some type of psychotic break. I believe the court found him to be in a mental breakdown, and he was searching for the rapist for some kind of retribution. Anyway, once word had gotten out about the motives behind it, no one really wanted to press charges, but because of the damage and injuries, police had no choice. But there was some public outcry at his trial, so he got offered a place here.
I lean back against the shelf, sighing. No one is fighting for me, except my attorney. He was the only reason I got offered a place here. I was lucky a spot opened up, apparently.
You realize it's not first come, first served, right?
What do you mean? I ask. Gray squeezes my hand.
Just because a place opens up doesn't mean the first people to apply gets in. There's a selection process.
Why am I not surprised? I grumble. They want the best charity cases for their public image. He shrugs.
Maybe. But you were very much wanted. You were the chosen one.
I turn my head to look at him. Really?
Yeah, there's a whole fucking committee of stiffs who review applications when a place opens up.
Wow, I mumble stunned. That's oddly comforting. Gray hums agreeing.
They must have really liked you and thought you deserved a chance.
On my first day here, Vivian said the spot I took was because someone died. When was that? The smile on his face dropped slightly.
About 5 weeks before you arrived.
Did you know them? I ask. Gray nods, looking up at the ceiling.
Yeah, I did. I know everyone here.
There's some tension from here, so I drop the subject, taking a breath. It's your turn now, I guess. We got a little sidetracked.
Yeah, we did. Tell me about your home life.
An uncomfortable chill rolls through me. That's not a question.
Okay. What are your parents like?
Bastard. I take a moment to think, wondering how to describe them. There's so many words I could use, but there will also never be enough. My parents are dead, I start. My mom was okay, but she had a lot of demons to fight. She had depression, and it just never really got better. She tried to spend time with me, but most of the time she was locked in her bedroom wanting to be alone. Eventually, it got to be too much for her. Gray gives my hand a tight squeeze, comforting me.
She killed herself?
I nod. When I was 13, I found her after school one day.
Fuck. I'm so sorry.
I made peace with it, at least from her side of things. I just wish she loved me enough to stay. I wish I had been enough. I feel some tears slip down my cheeks and I brush them away. Gray lets go of my hand, putting his arm around my shoulder.
You are enough, Avery. You're more than enough.
I shrug. I don't believe that, but thanks.
What about your father?
This time I laugh. Just a long, dry, sarcastic laugh. He was and had always been a raging alcoholic with anger issues. He used to hit my mom. They fought all the time, day and night. When she died, it was no different. He just turned his attention to me instead. Gray's face scrunches up.
What? He hit you?
All the fucking time, I sigh, wiping away more tears. Nothing I did was ever good enough. He just saw me as some possession and inconvenience he had to tolerate.
That fucker,
Gray says in a dark, low tone.
But he's dead now.
I nod. He's dead. I believe it's my turn to ask a question. Gray trails his fingers up the side of my neck, massaging the soft skin.
Go on, then.
How did you come to be Damon's right-hand man? He laughs, fingers pausing for a brief second.
I annoyed him with my presence when I arrived. Eventually, he grew to love me. I'm pretty lovable.
You did tasks for him, I reply, reading between the lines.
I did, but we also became really close. He helped settle me when I first arrived. Kept me out of trouble. Kind of.
You staying out of trouble? I find that hard to believe, I tease. Gray grins at me, leaning down to kiss my cheek, whispering into my ear.
Oh, I'm full of trouble, little killer. The best kind.
Chapter 17. Damon. People scatter as my footsteps creep up behind them, sending them scampering like the pathetic little roaches they are. I have to admit, it's quite amusing. People always fall into one of two categories. Either they fear me, or they fear me but want me to notice them. A clear pathway forms as patients press themselves against the wall, standing still to wait while I pass. Some avoid eye contact, while others smile at me, hoping I notice them. I really don't care either way. Sadly for them, I won't notice them, at least not enough to care. To me, they are nothing more than a nuisance, fangirling me like annoying teeny boppers. I have no time for pleasantries, and I'm not here to make friends. At least the upside is, when people fear you, they do whatever the hell you want. Give me your access card. I order one of the guards standing at the end of the patient side of the facility. Arthur's office is on the other side of the building, normally an out-of-bounds area, except for me.
Yes, sir.
He answers, handing me the plastic card. Now, move, I growl, nearly pushing him out of the way to hit the access pad. It makes a beep, turning green before I swing the door open, pushing my way through to the much nicer side of the facility. Honestly, I don't even need his card. I have my own, but it's a good way to test who is obedient and who needs to be dealt with. As I cross the foyer, I spot Teddy surfing the internet on her computer. She's watching some fucked up, boring-ass YouTube video on knitting, and I have to wonder what Arthur sees in her. She probably sucks like a Dyson because everything about her is dusty as powder.
Damon, you shouldn't be out here.
She scolds, glaring at me but making no effort to stop me. The annoying cunt is one of the few staff members who has the audacity to call me by my first name. Lucky for her, I'm in a decent mood today since the lockdown has been lifted. That's what I'm going to speak to Arthur about. The old crusty asshole is pushing things too far again, and he needs to remember his place. Go fuck yourself with your knitting sticks, Dorothea. She purses her lips, falling silent as I reach the other side of the foyer, slamming open Arthur's office door. He's sitting behind his desk, laughing at something on his phone when he looks up, spotting me.
Damon, what are you doing here?
He goes to stand, but I point my finger down. Sit, I snap, kicking the door shut behind me.
This is highly inappropriate.
He argues, slamming his phone on the desk in annoyance.
You can't just waltz in here whenever you please.
I can do whatever the fuck I want, I say, putting my hands on the back of one of the guest chairs, staring at him. You, on the other hand, cannot. Arthur raises an eyebrow.
You're mad about the isolation.
You bet your ass I am. We had students getting stabbed 3 months ago and people getting noses broken last month, and the only punishment you dished out was the removal of free time for 1 day. Full isolation for 3 days? That's going too far. He puffs out his chest, doing his best to act tough.
May I remind you, I'm the head of this facility, and decisions are made at my discretion.
I laugh loudly, his eyes twitching in apprehension. Please, we all know how you landed this job, and just because you handle the day-to-day shit here doesn't make you in charge. If you pull that shit again, I'll be forced to step in.
You should learn to act like a normal patient. Your family is displeased with your behavior.
I couldn't give a shit what you report to my family, Arthur, but if you cross me again, there will be consequences. I don't wait for his reply, turning on my heel and heading out of the office. Teddy is on her feet at the desk, staring at the office door when I emerge. She, at least, has the self-preservation to bite her tongue as I stroll past again, looking displeased. Before I head to the locked doors to enter the patient side again, I catch her out of the side of my peripheral vision heading into Arthur's office. She always has to know the gossip, probably why she puts up with fucking him. He probably doesn't even know where the asshole is, much less the clitoris. The dickhead probably has a mirror at the end of his bed so he can watch his own performance and high-five himself. As I pass the guard whose card I swiped, I don't bother to hand it back to him, making a point to put it into my pocket as I pass him. He looks young, probably only a few years older than me. I'd say he's new to the job, and lucky for him, he seems to have a pretty good idea how shit works.
He's trouble.
I hear, and I look into the open office, finding Christopher sitting at his desk. Pausing, I turn my attention to the worker on the floor next to his desk, cutting the carpet. What's going on here? I ask, stepping into the room. Christopher smiles politely, unfazed.
Patient bled all over the floor. Foundation is replacing the carpet.
I scoff, leaning against the doorframe. Nepotism much. And how much did that cost, dear cousin? He shrugs, leaning back into the chair. It tilts back, and I'm surprised he doesn't put his feet on the desk. The bastard has gotten really sophisticated over the past few years, thinking his shit doesn't stink. I remember when he used to get high and fuck girls on his parents' dinner table every other weekend while spending their cash on useless things. Ever since he got his degree, he's turned into some pompous asshole.
Money is no object. Besides, it needed to be fixed. Isn't that what insurance and incidental expenses are for?
Amazing. You learned basic business skills at Duke. Congratulations. Good to see your daddy's money didn't go to total waste. I mock. Christopher laughs, turning to the worker on the floor.
Can you excuse us for a moment?
The guy looks at him, then me, before shrugging.
I'm paid hourly. Whatever.
I roll my eyes, not moving, so he has to squeeze past me in the doorway.
Is there something you need? Or are we just catching up? You know, we could do that if you just came to your professional appointments.
Walking inside the office, I throw myself down carelessly on the chair across from him, looking bored. I don't need your psychobabble bullshit. Besides, that would be a conflict of interest, and since there's no other psychs on staff...
I could request one. I am rather overloaded with 100 patients. Well, 99, anyway.
Nice try, but I don't think so. Besides, you don't like to share, never have, never will. He nods slowly, laughing.
What do you want, Damon?
I assume you make comprehensive file notes.
No.
He interjects, I raise an eyebrow. No. Christopher stands, folding his arms.
I'm not giving you access to confidential patient information. You might get away with a lot here, but that's one line you aren't going to be crossing.
We'll see. I shoot back, getting to my feet. Still play baseball every Thursday night? His face darkens, but the smile doesn't fade.
You better head off, Damon. I believe it's nearly the end of free time.
The bastard will crack eventually. He might be able to fool everyone else, but not me. As I approach the hall, I'm surprised and annoyed to find Gray emerging from the library doors with none other than her. Avery doesn't seem to notice me, but when Gray stops her, whispering something to her before she nods and heads off into the hall, I know he does. Turning back inside the library, I follow, finding him by the desks when I enter. I see you took my concerns under advisement. Gray leans backwards on the desk, his hands holding him up.
Not really.
He grins.
But once again, thanks for your concern.
I roll my eyes, shaking my head. He checks the time on his non-existent watch when I don't reply.
You said you trusted me, so I assume this isn't about Avery. Want to fill me in before the bell goes?
I spoke to Arthur, I tell him casually. I guess we will see in due course if he actually listened.
Oh.
Gray says, nodding.
Always a fun time.
Yes, I answer, the siren cutting us off. Speaking of which, since I'm in a meeting mood, you don't mind if I speak to Avery, do you? Gray straightens up, looking at me suspiciously.
I guess not. But play nice.
I'm always nice, I tell him, turning around and heading out of the library. I stand outside the hall, Gray slipping out of the library behind me to join the crowd. She's easy to spot, even in a sea of charcoal vomit. Her black hair sticks out and she's always fidgeting, looking around at her surroundings. When the guards start leading people out, I wait until she's stepped into the hall, motioning for her guard to stop. I need to speak to her, I say, nodding towards Avery. Wait here. Avery looks surprised and alarmed, but I grab her by the arm, pulling her inside the library. People watch curiously, and I close the door, giving us privacy. She lingers in the walkway, awkwardly, eyes shooting around nervously as I block the door. Avery, I start, straightening up. I don't believe we've had much of a chance to speak, one-on-one. She swallows hard, playing with the filthy bandage on her forearm.
I guess not.
Timid as a fucking mouse. I have to wonder what Gray sees in her.